Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 1 Kings chapter 16. With all these kings moving about, it's important to remember that that's not the main story. The main story is about the development of a nation into idolatry, which eventually explains why they got carried away to Babylon, the northern kingdom gets ultimately destroyed with 10 of the tribes, and the southern kingdom with the tribe of Judah and Benjamin and some of the Levites survives. This is more of a spiritual commentary than something you'll be tested on later as far as the reign of these kings. It's not like the presidents. Who was the 14th president of the United States? Remember, the northern kingdom never follows God from day one, and they're wiped out much sooner. The southern kingdom, known as Judah, which has Jerusalem as its capital, has a series of fits and starts. Kings that follow God and kings who don't. And they last a lot longer as a result. But eventually, both kingdoms peter out. The northern kingdom gets wiped out by the Assyrians years later, and those that intermingle and marry with the Assyrians are known as Samaritans. While in the southern kingdom, they are the semi-faithful kingdom who gets carried away to Babylon and eventually restored back to the land years later under Nehemiah and Ezra. Once you have that big picture of the overarching story that the Bible's telling, then it makes it a lot easier to understand what boxes to put these kings in. Kings who followed God and kings who didn't. Kings who helped prolong the preservation of their kingdom by following God for a time versus kings that drove it headlong into destruction. That's the story that 1 Kings is telling. But along the way, we'll have prophets that rise up and challenge those kings. Do better. Follow God. Repent. Verse 1 of chapter 16 opens up with such a prophet. Then the word of the Lord came to Jehu, son of Hanani, concerning Baasha. I lifted you up from the dust and appointed you ruler over my people Israel. But you followed the ways of Jeroboam and caused my people Israel to sin and to arouse my anger by their sins. So I'm about to wipe out Baasha and his house, and I will make your house like that of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Dogs will eat those belonging to Baasha who die in the city, and birds will feed on those who die in the country. As for the other events of Baasha's reign, what he did and his achievements, are they not written in the book of the annals of the king of Israel? Baasha rested with his ancestors, was buried in Tirzah, and Elah, his son, succeeded him as king. Moreover, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Jehu, son of Hanani, to Baasha and his house because of all the evil he had done in the eyes of the Lord, arousing his anger by the things he did, becoming like the house of Jeroboam, and also because he destroyed it. Now verse 8 moves into Elah, king of Israel. So Baasha, if you remember, was the one who overthrew Jeroboam's kingdom and family line, and now God's going to do the same to him. Enter his son Elah, who becomes king of Israel and reigns a brief 2 years. Zimri, one of his officials, the head of all of his chariots, hashtag the army, actually comes in and strikes Elah down when he's drunk and takes his throne. He completely destroys Baasha's entire family, just as Baasha did to Jeroboam. Verse 12 says, so Zimri destroyed the whole family of Baasha in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken against Baasha through the prophet Jehu because of all the sins he and his son Elah committed and had caused Israel to commit, so they aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. Have you noticed so far that when the Bible talks about idols, it doesn't just say idols, it says detestable, disgusting, or worthless? Because the Bible sees idols for what they are. It doesn't invest in them the value that you and I see in them, or does it leave them neutral? Rather, it sees them from a heavenly perspective as being disgusting, worthless, or just plain stupid. You know, one day we'll look back from the vantage point of eternity and see the shiny baubles that so entranced us, and we'll think, man, was I stupid. After all, we'll be gazing at the Son of God, the King of Kings, seated on his throne, that even the cherubim and the seraphim that you and I couldn't stand 2 seconds in the presence of without coming unglued, well, those beings fall down in front of him in fear and awe at his majesty. and will be doing the same. And trust you me, the video games, the fashion icons, the things that we put so much worth and value in during our brief stay here on Earth ain't gonna mean diddly squat. Now, I know this simply because I'm old. I'm 46 years old, and I can remember when everybody had to have a fanny pack back in the day. And man, oh man, they were the hallmark of cool. Now, wearing a fanny pack is just a joke. That's how all of our idols will seem when we're finally standing in the presence of the King of Kings. Back to our story, though. So Zimri overthrows Elah and attempts to take the throne. But because Elah was in the middle of a battle, no sooner does Zimri start to try to reign than the Israelites in the camp in verses 15 through 19, the very soldiers that were fighting on behalf of King Elah, who's just been assassinated, turn against Zimri and say, "We will not have you as king. We pronounce Omri the new king." Well, you could say that Zimri doesn't take this too well and lights the palace on fire around himself, verse 18, so he died. I don't know about you, but when I read these chapters, so far, that idolatry thing, forsaking the God of Israel, that's not been working out too well for the northern kingdom, and it certainly doesn't work out too well for Zimri. But here we see a case of prophecy at the beginning of the chapter and its immediate fulfillment. Both verse 13 and verse 19 give a summary of the tragic ends of these kings. Both kings are wiped out because of their idolatry. They arouse the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. Note that it says, God is the God of Israel, whether or not they're worshiping him. You see, God doesn't wait around for us to say, "You're my God," for it to be true. It is true. The question is whether or not we refuse to recognize who he is. In the same way that he's the God of Israel, he's also the God of this earth. He made it, he rules it, and he's the rightful king, even if silly kings choose not to recognize it. Just like we rule over our little kingdoms and make statements like, "He's not my God," hashtag not my God. Well, I got news for you. He's the only God there is. The only real one, that is, the only one who's not an idol. And one day, all of us will bow before him when the whole charade is all over. When we wake up from our little fantasy, our dream of us being the ruler of our own little universe will be shattered. You see, God is your God no matter who or what you worship, because you live in his world and you are his creation. When we say Jesus is Lord, like Romans tells us to, we're not making him our king. We're simply bowing before him as the king. Nothing on his end has changed, but everything on our end has. Notice that the book of Kings is still following this formula that we talked about in the introduction. It summarizes a king's reign, talks about him dying, then introduces the next king, and that former king is still alive. That may be confusing. I mean, we just heard that Baasha died, but here he is alive in the next passage again. Ain't nobody got time for that. If we saw a movie or TV show like that, our minds would say, "Hey, that dude's dead already. Why are you telling the story that way?" But remember, the book of Kings is an account of a king's reign, and you can't tell the story of one king's origin story, rise or fall, without it bleeding into the story of another. The chapter ends by putting our focus on King Omri, who becomes a very evil king. And we'll read more about him and his son King Ahab, the worst villain in the entire Old Testament, in our next chapter. So I'm going to save that for tomorrow, but be sure today to read 1 Kings chapter 16, and as you do, be thankful you're not going to wear a fanny pack for all eternity.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.